Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with justice delayed since the 1980s until last Friday, with an 80-year sentence given to Guatemalan General Rios Montt for genocide. Cultural anthropologist Victoria Stanford, who spent the last 20 years uncovering evidence of genocide in Guatemala, joins us to discuss the fight for justice for the Mayan people, 200,000 of whom were slaughtered by a military who, along with an entrenched oligarchy, still rule this cruel and corrupt narco state. Then we'll look into the alarming findings from the Scripps Oceanographic Institute's observatory on Hawaii's Mauna Loa that now measure CO2 in the atmosphere at 400 parts per million, the highest the Earth has seen in 3.6 million years. Dr. Brenda Eckwurzel, a climate scientist with the Union of Concerned Scientists, joins us to discuss the significance of this finding and the rapid rise of CO2 in the atmosphere, which is further evidence, as if we needed it, of global warming, climate change, and rising sea levels on an endangered planet. Then finally, we'll speak with Dr. Amitai Etzioni, who is a professor of international affairs and director of the Institute for Communitarian Studies at George Washington University. We'll discuss his latest article at The Atlantic, "The Liberal Narrative is Broken and Only Populism Can Fix It," and the fact that for every one liberal in America, there are two conservatives, and that current ideas liberals have about changing that uncomfortable political equation are delusional. And joining us now is cultural anthropologist Victoria Stanford, who studies human rights, international humanitarian law, the anthropology of genocide, race and gender in the Americas, and child soldiers within Guatemala, Colombia, and South Africa. She is the director of the Center for Human Rights and Peace Studies based at Lehman College, City University, New York, and has spent the past 20 years uncovering evidence of genocide in Guatemala. Welcome to Background Briefing, Victoria Stanford.
Thanks so much for having me.
And given that you've spent the past 20 years going back to the 1990s in Guatemala doing field work, and I imagine it's pretty grim and grisly field work if you're uncovering evidence of genocide, how did you react to the verdict on Friday where the former dictator, Efrem Rios Montt, was sentenced to 80 years in jail for genocide?
Well, I get goosebumps when you ask me the question, so that gives you an idea. 10 years ago, I was publishing a book in Guatemala about Rios Montt as a genocidaire, and he was running for president. So in the passage of 10 years, he's gone from being the candidate in a runoff, almost winning the presidency, to spending the weekend in jail as the first head of state ever convicted for genocide by a domestic court. It's amazing.
And what do we make, though, of the fact that the current president, retired General Otto Perez Molina, has denied that genocide ever took place? He himself may well be guilty, if not as guilty as Rios Montt, even more guilty. Does he have the power to overturn this verdict?
Absolutely not. He wishes that he did. So he's using what he does have, which is his ability to mobilize other military, retired military people and sympathizers to the military and do a disinformation campaign denying that the genocide took place. But he is a genocidaire. He was in Neiva, the area of Guatemala where Rios Montt's just been convicted of committing a genocide, and he was the commander there. And there's footage of him standing in the midst of dead bodies saying the army doesn't kill, while his soldiers are kicking the dead bodies and saying, we brought these people to be interrogated by the major being Perez Molina. He's a genocidaire. He's not going to admit what he did. The question really is, are they going to bring a sitting head of state to court charged with genocide?
And what's the politics of the country at the moment? I mean, my understanding is it's a very, very corrupt government, tremendous influence of drug cartels. It has this deeply entrenched oligarchy that's been running the place forever, represented by the business association known as CACIF. So give us a quick sketch of the political power structures there.
Well, I think that you just did. And in the midst of all that, what's amazing is that since the signing of the peace accords, a reasonably independent judiciary and functioning prosecutorial section has developed. And that's why we have this case happening there. That's why Rios Montt was convicted. There's been the beginning of a semblance of rule of law in Guatemala. That's not to say that there isn't corruption in the prosecutorial system or in the court system, which is why Rios Montt's defense lawyers have successfully been able to get other judges in different parts of the court to repeatedly stop the case, because at least 50%, it's a 50-50, who's corrupt and who's not. But there are good people, and there have been reforms. And the trial and conviction, I think, isn't just about the genocide. It's also about the peace process itself. It's about democracy in Guatemala. And the fact that he was convicted means that there is a possibility for there to be a democracy. And it means that the peace accords that were signed in 1996 are more than just the cessation of killing.
And again, I'm speaking with cultural anthropologist Victoria Sanford, who studies human rights, international humanitarian law, the anthropology of genocide, race and gender in the Americas, and child soldiers within Guatemala, Colombia, and South Africa. She is the director of the Center for Human Rights and Peace Studies based at Lehman College, City University, New York, and has spent the last 20 years uncovering evidence of genocide in Guatemala. Can you describe for us, obviously it's Sunday morning and we don't want to be too upset people unduly, but the truth of the matter is genocide did take place and you're one of the people that uncovered the evidence. Describe your field work if you can.
Sure. Well, the work that we began in the early 1990s in Guatemala with the Guatemalan Forensic Anthropology Foundation were the exhumations of clandestine cemeteries, which means the forensic excavation of the skeletal remains and artifacts of people who were brutally murdered by the army. And I took testimonies from survivors so that we could reconstruct what happened in these communities before, during, and after the massacres. I think that people can imagine every atrocity. Sadly, we know all kinds of awful things that happen in the world and the different and brutal ways that people can kill. But because it is Sunday morning, what I will say is in the leaked document that belonged to the Army, Operation Sophia, Plan Sophia, you can find it in the National Security Archives, they have code words for everything, for not only for their military officers, but they have a code word for Ishil women, cucarachas, cockroaches, and they have a code word for Ishil children, chocolate, chocolate. And the orders are, kill the cockroaches, leave no chocolates. We know what that means.
And this group that you're talking about, they are a Mayan tribe, is that right?
The Ishil Maya, correct. There are 21 different Maya indigenous groups, and the Ishil Maya are in northern Guatemala, and this is the area where one of the genocides took place. So it was a genocide of indigenous people throughout the country. The particular case that Rios Montt has been charged with committing genocide is against the Maya, against the Ishil Maya.
And all told, some 200,000 people were killed by the military, and I guess to some extent also by the guerrillas. So let's get some context for that then, Victoria Sanford. Why were the military killing their own people, even if there's a kind of racism involved, which I understand is the case?
Sure. I mean, there's a deep-rooted racism. I want to talk about the numbers for a minute. 200,000 people were killed, and 83% of the people killed were Maya. And of the 200,000 people killed, the 50,000 people disappeared, and all of the acts of violence in Guatemala, the Truth Commission found that the army committed 93% of those acts of violence, that the URNG guerrilla committed 3%, and they were unable to attribute 4%. So when the army says both sides committed excesses or this was an armed confrontation, that's absolutely not true. It was the wholesale slaughter of civilians. And why did they do it? It was a preemptive strike. If you think of what Central America looked like in the early 1980s, and you layer into it that Guatemala is the only majority indigenous country in the Americas, and that it has the most unequitable distribution of wealth in the hemisphere, and a higher concentration of land wealth than any other country in the hemisphere, and one of the worst in the world, you look at the fact that in the early 1980s, the guerrilla in El Salvador controlled 30% of the territory, and the Sandinistas were having a revolution in Nicaragua. what I would suggest is that the army and the oligarchy got together and they said, well, we don't want a revolution here. We're not going to let a bunch of Indians run this country. And they just decided to eliminate them. And that's why it was so easy for Rios Montt to say, we're going to take the water away from the fish. He never said, we're surgically removing the gorilla. There were no tactical operations to try to eliminate the 2,500 gorilla that were demobilized. What he did was he said, we'll take the water from the fish. And they went in and deliberately killed all civilians to make sure there were no guerrillas.
And tell us about the guerrilla group, the UNRG.
Well, when the URNG demobilized in as part of the peace accords in 1996, there were 2,500 combatants that demobilized. About 900 of them actually carried weapons. At that time, the army in Guatemala had more than 60,000 heavily armed troops. They also had more than 250,000 of the civilian male population forcibly participating in army-controlled civil patrols. And of that 250,000, they had 15,900 of those men armed. So the guerrilla were always outgunned. It wasn't a war against the guerrilla. It was a war against any type of social change, which is why the army targeted, in both rural and urban areas, teachers, students, catechists, priests, nuns, union organizers, cooperativists, anyone who spoke for social or political change. Because in Guatemala, if you speak up for political participation or for economic participation or for equality, the oligarchy and the army will label you as a subversive, as a communist, as a guerrilla, and today as a drug trafficker.
Well, I recall speaking, I think her name was Jennifer Harbury, whose husband was murdered some time ago, and the brutality of the Guatemalan military was unspeakable. I mean, it's unbelievable. That's what I don't understand, is where does that incredible brutality come from? From just the arrogance of being oligarchs? But then of course, who were the foot soldiers? Who were the executioners? They weren't the rich ones, were they?
No, they weren't. It's a very good question, and I think that the answer lies in the fusion of this deep-rooted racism on the one hand and this incredibly brutal military training that involved killing dogs that were with your bare hands and eating raw dog meat out of a bowl. And if you vomited, you had to eat that. I mean, the brutality, they learned to torturing one another. The brutality with which soldiers were trained. I've interviewed former soldiers in Guatemala and in exile in the United States and Mexico and Caipiles. And what they'll say consistently is they taught me to hate. I hated my commanders. I hated the other soldiers. I hated myself. I hated the peasants begging for mercy. They teach people to hate. And the brutality is systematic. And so we know that people were trained to commit atrocities because it's too much that the exact same atrocities are happening all over the country at the same time. So when the army says, as Rios Montt's lawyers did, and as Perez Molina will say, you know, there were rogue officers, some people were out of control. Well, that doesn't make sense. When there are 626 massacres around the country, and they all have the same framework, the same pattern of excessive and horrible behavior, of tying people to trees and making neighbors, machete neighbors, to death. They're horrible, awful things that were done, but they're the same tactics used all around the country at the same time.
And again, I'm speaking with cultural anthropologist Victoria Sanford, who has spent the past 20 years uncovering evidence of genocide in Guatemala. And just a brief sketch of the history, of course, there was a CIA coup in Guatemala in 1954, getting rid of a very, very harmless leader who dared take care of the country's people, installing this succession of military thugs. The American military relationship was fairly deep until in the 1970s when Jimmy Carter cut off aid to them, but then Ronald Reagan restored it. And then, of course, Rios Montt took power in a coup. President Reagan described Rios Montt as a man of great personal integrity and commitment. Rios Montt himself, who's just been sentenced to 80 years in prison for genocide, he was a right-wing Christian evangelical associated with a fundamentalist charismatic church here in Northern California, I believe. He was operating apparently with religious fervor, trying to eliminate communist atheists. That's my understanding.
Well, and Catholics. The church went after Catholics. When Rees-Mont came to power, so many clergy were attacked and murdered, in particularly in Quiché area, which is where the Ishil live, but in other parts of the country as well, that the Catholic Church withdrew its clergy and closed its churches. The army quickly took over those churches. I participated in an exhumation in a colonial church in San Andres, Sacabaja, and the army made that church, as they did in 9 other municipalities, they made these central colonial churches their jails, their torture chambers, and then they buried their victims in the floor of the church. We actually exhumed tortured people who'd been tortured and killed inside of a church. The Church of the Word, which you're right, was from Eureka, California. 2 years before Rees-Mont came to power, that church was run by a man whose last name was Durbin, and there were 13 people who belonged to that church, and he ran a car wash, and it was one of these sort of halfway houses for alcoholics. Like, that was what existed. And then somehow, 2 years later, it's a giant, well-funded church in Guatemala. I'll let you do the strategic math and figure out where all the money came from. But that church used this disinformation campaign where they claimed that anyone who raised any questions about inequality in the country were guerrilla, which meant they were communists, which meant that they were the devils. And the propaganda that they dropped actually showed people with tails and horns like the devil.
But the long and the short of it was that you only had about this so-called guerrilla threat that Gene Kirkpatrick and Ronald Reagan and the entire Reagan administration saw as the long arm of the Soviet Union meddling in America's backyard with El Salvador and Nicaragua. It was a fiction. 800 guys with guns, I imagine most of them were trying to defend their own people who were being massacred. And the real motive was to perpetuate this oligarchical control over this very wealthy country that a handful of families have controlled forever. And now you have a government that not only has enormous blood on its hands, it's also become a narco state.
Absolutely. And so the issue today, I think, with the conviction for the United States is, are we going to give weapons to Pérez Molina? Because he's asking for weapons. He's asking the Obama administration to give him weapons to arm the police and the army so that they can do joint maneuvers to control drug trafficking. At the same time, in the last 2 weeks, he's declared a state of siege in 4 different communities in Guatemala that happen to be communities where Canadian mining interests are at work, where people have been holding protests about their environmental rights because the mining is polluting the water and their environment. And he said there are drug traffickers in this region. He declared a state of siege, and that meant that people can't gather peacefully, they can't protest, and there are images of the army holding lists of names, and they're picking up those people. So I think the question for us as Americans today is, what are we going to do in Guatemala? Certainly, we shouldn't be sending weapons to this government.
Well, but is this an incredible and cynical ruse here? This is a government of generals and oligarchs who are in bed with drug dealers, and at the same time, they're using the war on drugs as a way to round up people and round up their political enemies and suppress dissent? I mean, that's pretty
cynical. That's what they did during the Cold War. They used anti-communism to do the same thing. And that's what they're doing today with using the drug traffickers. I mean, people went from being subversives and guerrillas to being drug traffickers. And they're very good at using whatever type of discourse we put out to declare who their enemy is. The first thing that happened when this trial really got going is the right wing set up a new organization called the Foundation Against Terrorism, and they put out a 20-page full-color circular in the newspaper that looks like the Los Angeles Times Sunday Magazine or the New York Times Sunday Magazine, and it's a 20-page piece called The Farce of Genocide, which says it's all communists and guerrillas. And they say, you know, the problem is these people had this strategy that began with the peace accords, and it's going to end with this trial, and they're going to take over the country. The communists are going to take over the country. They're subversives. The people who are testifying, they didn't really suffer genocide. They've been paid. They're doing it for financial gain. They're guerrillas. Right? And they're accusing women who bravely stood up and spoke about the unspeakable sexual violence to which they were subjective. One woman talked about watching her 7-year-old sister be raped to death. And these people are saying that these poor Ishil women are lying? It's absolutely stunning. But they think that discourse works. And CNN did an interview with Perez Molina, and he actually cut off the connection at one point. They lost the connection. They didn't lose it. He cut it off so he could consult with his advisors to find out what was going on. It looked like something from 1980s Guatemala, where suddenly there's no signal, right? But that's what the army does. They control communications. They control the way that the discourse takes place, because most of the major newspapers are also owned by the oligarchy. And there were ads that were run that included former President Berchet, Vice President Stein, saying that people who supported the genocide trials were betraying the peace accords, that they were traitors to the peace accords. That's incredibly powerful language, to say that because you pursue justice as a genocide survivor, that somehow that makes you a traitor to the nation. And then they put out a circular that's called Los Rostros de Infamia, the Face of Infamy. And on that, they have full-color photos of the current attorney general, an incredibly brave woman, Claudia Paz y Paz, who's helped to make these trials possible, the judges in the tribunal, the prosecutors who are trying to prosecute the case, the lawyers who represent the victims, the leaders of the victims, expert witnesses like Martha Casals from Spain, Jean Marie Simon, Kate Doyle, Pamela Yates, and others. They're all... their photos are there. It's a full-color hit list. It's absolutely amazing. And they're doing this in the 21st century in Guatemala.
Well, just in the last 30 seconds or so, Victoria, can you tell our audience what they can do and what our government should be doing about this?
Write to the State Department and President Obama and your representatives and tell them no military aid for genocidaires. Not today, not ever.
Well, Victoria Sanford, I thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Again, I've been speaking with cultural anthropologist Victoria Sanford, who studies human rights, international humanitarian law, the anthropology of genocide, race and gender in the Americas, and child soldiers within Guatemala, Colombia, and South Africa. She is the director of the Center for Human Rights and Peace Studies based at Lehman College, City University, New York, and has spent the past 20 years uncovering evidence of genocide in Guatemala. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about the precipitous rise in CO2 in the atmosphere, the highest that the Earth has seen in 3.6 million years.
Woman on my block, she just sit there facing the hill. She say, who gonna take away his license to kill? Now he's helping for destruction.